unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Heavy.
So often I think about it. If you were just listening to this at home or something, somebody suddenly goes, "Whoa!" So I wanted to talk about another story from the Hidden Lamp. Sort of forgotten about this book, you know, and then I was looking for stories from African American teachers last month, and I rediscovered the book, The Hidden Lamp. Oh, right, there's lots of good stuff in there. So I want to talk about Linji meets the old woman driving the ox. Linji is otherwise known. As in Japanese, they call him Rinzai. You know who Rinzai was, right? The founder of Rinzai Zen, the Koan school? Okay. So, Master Linji Yishuan. Master Linji Yishuan went to see Master Bingjian An. On the way, he met an old woman driving an ox in a field. Linji asked her, which way is the road to Bingjian? The woman hit the ox with her stick and said, "This animal, it walks all over the place without even recognizing the road." He repeated, "I asked you, Which way is the road to Bingjian?" The woman said, "This beast, it's 5 years old and still can't be put to use." Linji said to himself, "If you want to learn something from the person in front of you, first observe what the person does." And he had the feeling that his sticking point had been removed. Then, when he reached Master An, An asked him, "Have you seen my sister-in-law?" She said, "Yes, I've already been taken in tow." And I just thought that was pretty good. This commentary is by Miyokaku Jane Schneider. And Jane Schneider, it co-teaches at the... I forget what it's the name. It's Northridge Zen Center. It has a more poetic name than that, which I'm managing to forget. And they were both students of Suzuki Roshi's. He sent them off to Japan, and so they lived in Japan for many years. And they're both quite wonderful. So she said that she liked this because it reminded her of a teacher that she had had when she was in Japan. They lived in Kyoto. They lived off-site near a temple. And she says, "I like this image of the older woman with the ox because of my 22 years of experience with a Shingon Buddhist lay ordained teacher, Kojun Chiba." Shingon is sometimes called the esoteric school in Japan, and it's more like, maybe more like Tibetan than anything else. And their biggest sacred site is Mount Koya, otherwise known as Koya-san. Did you go to Koya-san? It's an amazing place. You go up this gondola. If you're going on the train and you get to the train station and then you get on this gondola, or maybe it was one of those cable cars that goes up a mountain, up to the top. And then there are a bunch of little smaller temples around. And then there's the main temple, which is devoted to the founder, Kobo Daishin is his posthumous name at any rate. And this huge, huge cemetery. And the cemetery is, the theory is that Kobo Daishin didn't die. He's just asleep. He's in deep, deep samadhi. So then what you want to do is you want to be buried there in some way so that you'll be there when he wakes up. So sometimes I think people just bury, like some fingernail clippings or a lock of hair or something like that from their loved one there. And it's an amazing cemetery. It's quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. And there's statues and stuff. I have a photograph which I keep meaning to. I have managed to lose it, but I found the negative. It's a Jizo. There's lots of Jizos. And, obviously I'm probably there mostly for babies who died. And this one is a Jizo with a little knit baby cap and a bib on. Mm. That's a bib, one that says baby on it or something, and it just breaks your heart. Anyway, there's this huge, huge, beautiful cemetery with lots of Jizos. And so it's a place where people go. You can spend the night in one of the temples. So we did that. So that is what I know about Shingon Buddhism. We tried to find out more about it at the time, but of course this was in 1992 and it wasn't the time when you just had a phone and you could just Google it. So So she was this teacher that she was working with was a Shingon Buddhist lay ordained teacher, Kojun Chiba. She was in her early 60s when Peter and I met her in Kyoto in 1973. She'd raised four children, and her home was a designated part of Mount Koya, the home temple of Shingon Buddhism. So I guess that, because I went to Koya-san from Kyoto, I believe. Yeah, it must have been. And it was not... It wasn't nearby. I mean, it took a few hours at any rate to get there. So maybe when there's a teacher's place, then that's designated as part of Mount Koya, I guess. At any rate, her home was a designated part of Mount Koya, the home temple of Shingon Buddhism. She rose at 3:30 a.m. every day to do her practices. Her altar Buddha was Benzaiten, an eight-armed female figure that had been hand-carved for her by a priest friend. Benzaiten is very popular in Japan as one of the seven gods of good fortune, the only female, and also as a many-armed figure in Tendai and Shingon Buddhism. Which also reminds me of the many-armed Avalokiteshvara, which is often a lot more than eight arms, but at any rate, that same sort of notion. She's associated with Benzaiten is associated with eloquence and creativity. Chiba Sensei once went with us on an overnight sailboat trip to the island in Lake Biwa, where one of the oldest statues of Benzaiten is enshrined. The only picture she ever allowed us to take of her is the group picture at the end of the trip. Chiba Sensei's way of teaching through everyday affairs was natural and compassionate. She encouraged me to nurture creativity, and many of our meetings dealt with painting as a Buddhist practice. With her encouragement, I went to school to learn Nihonga, Japanese traditional painting. Once she came to my studio to look at some work, she sat for a long time in front of a large painting and finally said, "I like it," and then she went home. This koan reminds me of one of Chiba Sensei's primary teachings. Take full responsibility for your life in the world as it is. Full responsibility for your life in the world as it is. So, there's this old lady with an ox. And she doesn't answer Rinzai. Or does she? Or does she? This animal, he walks all over the place without even recognizing the road. This beast, he's 5 years old and still can't be put to use. And then something opens up for him. You know, as he says to himself, if you want to learn something from somebody, I guess the first thing is you watch what they do. Look at them. And I guess he figured it out, because he did get there. It's got all kinds of levels, this story, aside from the fact that it's funny. I hate to sort of talk about it. They talked about Dongshan, I guess during the Sesshin, about that you know, the famous saying of he is me, I'm not he. And I talked about it, and then I heard from Leon later. He said if he realized that I was going to explain it so much, he would have covered his ears. I thought, oh, right. The ox, as you may know, represents practice. You've heard of, at least I have spoken more than once, of the ox herding pictures. We have a little book about them somewhere. We have a lot of stuff about them, actually. But at any rate, they represent the 10, it's usually 10 pictures, represent stages of practice. And then, of course, you always have to say, of course, it doesn't work like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's not steps and stairs, but still there's some notion of that. So it starts out, there's a young monk, and she catches a little glimpse of the ox, or maybe just the footprints of the ox, footprints. And then a glimpse of the ox. And then goes searching after the ox, and finally catches the ox, and then has to work with taming the ox. And maybe there's a picture of her, pulling it to try to get it, maybe smacking it with a stick like the old lady. And then it gets to the point where the ox will follow her without being tied up anymore, without having a lead on a ring to its nose. And then there's a picture of the ox going along, and she's riding on its back, but it facing, you know, with her head against its neck, so that she's kind of facing backwards. She doesn't even have to pay attention to where it's going, and she's playing the flute. And then she's gone. They're both gone. Then sometimes there's an enso, or just a picture of cherry blossoms, something, emptiness. But the last picture is returning to the marketplace. So those that image of going back out into the world, with sometimes we say with gift bestowing hands. And those are, that's the ox herding pictures. And we do have one that came from, I think Grace Shearson gave it to us. Anyway, there's one with the monk as a woman, which is kind of nice. Because of Kel's surprise, it's usually a man. Yes.
When she returns to the market, does she have the ox? I can't remember. Interesting.
She has the ox, I think. So this woman is hitting the ox. What's she teaching? I mean, he surely knew about the ox as a symbol of your practice, or a symbol of your Buddha nature that you have to learn how to relate to, or something like that. How are you? I mean, that's a whole other lecture. But surely he knew that. So, what was she telling you? This ox won't do anything. And I think often as we start practice, we feel like that, you know, like, I can't do this. This is ridiculous, this stupid zazen. I don't know what they're talking about. And all I do, my mind just goes, and I'm thinking all the time, and it won't stop. And I try to push it away, as people often do, you know. It doesn't work either. And then there's that time when you start realizing how often you gossip and how often you speak of others' faults in other ways and how often you harbor ill will and so on, and you think, oh my Lord, what's the point of all this? I've become this horrible person. And then you realize, oh, I'm just another jerk. That's how I talk to myself. I'm not so proud of it, but it's funny. So, what's she saying to him, if anything? Is she talking to him at all? Is she teaching him? He seems to think so. And I've been taken in tow. I think we'd probably say I've been taken in hand, you know, or I've been taught by a master. What did he learn? He said that his sticking point had been removed. If you want to learn something from the person in front of you, first observe what the person does. And he had the feeling his sticking point had been removed. So what did he realize? What do you realize when you practice? And what does that mean? You know, look at the person, watch what they do. If you want to learn something from somebody or something, maybe in front of you, what do? Open your eyes. Yes.
Well, in this case, it seems to me that he's learning what not to do from the example in front of him.
What is it that he shouldn't do?
Well, in the simplest terms for me, the old lady is grasping. She's trying to beat a result into being, and she's going about it the wrong way, as far as I can tell. And it leads to nothing but frustration for her after 5 years, and things are still the same. I don't get it, man. For the student, maybe he sees something there, and poof, maybe I'm going about my practice the wrong way, and that I'm grasping at something, but I'm often wrong.
Well, there's a right and wrong, but I understand it differently.
Yeah, and maybe he saw her as this crazy lady, but then when he sort of stopped, he realized that, and thought about the ox and everything, that he saw that she was struggling with her practice, or maybe giving him a teachable moment about practice. It sort of doesn't matter, I think, but he maybe saw beneath the exterior of this crazy lady with an ox, and so it was kind of a practice moment or something like that. So often we see someone or something, I'm certainly guilty of it, and you have an instant reaction, and then later you realize it was wrong.
Well, she was this crazy old, and probably deaf too, because he asked a second time. Maybe he didn't hear me.
See, she's frustrated, but he was frustrated too.
She may not have been frustrated at all. I don't know, but I don't think so, but I don't know. Partly because of his saying, you know, I've been taken in tow. So I think he was saying, I have been taught. But I don't know, and you could be taught whether the person intended to or not.
Mm-hmm. Like all these crazy drivers on the road, when are they going to get it right?
Anybody else?
Mm-hmm. To me, what comes up is that the person in front of me is could be anyone, but it could be me. It could be my own practice. Mm-hmm. So he sees I have to observe myself better. I'm, you know, like I don't want to get so literal as to say he sees himself as the ox, but that would be one way of looking at it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a wonderful thing, is that there's not, you don't have to have only one way.
Oh, I've seen it, yes.
And, I don't know. Can't call him up. I just think, I mean, I see her as like the tea ladies in the various stories, you know, that are always teaching the monks. You know what I'm talking about, the tea ladies? You can say no if you don't know.
No.
Thank you. Tea ladies. There are lots of stories about tea ladies, and they're often unnamed. At least we got the two as his sister-in-law, so she's a little bit more of a person, you know. But there's one when Dushan, who was probably from the north, I don't know. He was an expert in the Diamond Sutra. And he came south with a cart full of commentaries on the Diamond Sutra. He was going to educate these southern barbarians. And he was going to visit, I forget who, but a Zen master. And at the bottom of the hill leading up to the temple, he paused at a tea shop. And the tea lady said, if you can answer my questions, I'll give you some tea and mooncakes for free. And she first says, what's in your cart? And he says, oh, it's commentaries on the Diamond Sutra. Kindly, you wouldn't understand. And she says, then, you know, if you can answer one question, then I'll give it to you for free. And he says, okay. And she says, in the Diamond Sutra, it says, past mind cannot be got at, present mind cannot be got at, future mind cannot be got at. With what mind do you eat these tea cakes? He can't answer. So she sends him off up the hill. And he has an awakening that night with the teacher. They talk, the teacher says, well, it's really late. You should go. You can sleep in that hut over there. And he hands him a little, you know, paper, a lantern. And as Dushan turns to leave, the teacher blows out the light. And he wakes up. And in the morning, he burns all of his commentaries on the Diamond Sutra, which I've always thought was a little extreme. And this is getting really off the topic, but Dushan is the teacher to whom Shui Feng went, I think it was. You may remember the story where the teacher goes to the Tenzo and he says, do you separate the rice from the grain, from the sand, or the sand from the rice? And I forget what he says, and the teacher presses a little bit, he says, like, I separate them all or something. Mm-hmm. And or he turns over at some point he turns over the whole bucket, and the teacher says, you'll find your affinity with another teacher. And that was Dushan, because they're both kind of dramatic. At any rate, the woman that sent him on his way, well, that's a tea lady, and that's the kind of thing that they would do, bring them up, bring these highfalutin monks up short. and were often great, great teachers in themselves, even though they're not named in the stories. And there are a number of stories like that. So she strikes me as a tea lady kind of a person. And what I take away is something about just stop and look and trust yourself, because often you already know, or the information is at hand if you will stop and settle into yourself and look. Just look. So he did, and it was perhaps obvious which was the way to go. I mean, he must have come to lots and lots of crossroads. He must have had some directions or something. You know, I don't know if there were signposts. At any rate, that kind of thing, and to really to trust yourself. So that's what I think she was. She was refusing to answer him, and she was, you know, she was like beating her ox and saying, practice, you idiot. That's what I think. It's already after 11. So, oh, what do we go? I forget. We went, said 11:15 or something.
11:10. Yeah.
We'll aim for 11:10 and see what happens. If you want to learn something from the person in front of you, first observe what the person does. And he had the feeling his sticking point had been removed. So I think his sticking point was objectifying her, yes.
It's interesting because that was the line that really stuck out to me was learn what the person does. Mm-hmm. And so the way I took it was that it was a lesson in perspective, that the lesson she was teaching him, whether intentionally or not, was the problem you're having is you're looking at this question from the point of view of you being you. Mm-hmm. And you're asking me being me to answer it. So I'm going to answer it in a way that makes sense according to how what I'm doing or who I am. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's your problem, is that you're seeing it as you being you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's a major part of it. Jane says, they traveled by foot, and seeing an ox in a field was nothing unusual. So that Lindy was confused, confounded by her answer. He no doubt reasoned, she's old, I guess she didn't hear me. In fact, she had hit the ox, a symbol of practice to draw his attention to a way that he was looking for answers everywhere except in the most obvious place, himself. Confused by discrimination, he ignored the startling creativity of the moment. Not yet giving her his full attention, he pressed his question further, and she answered him again in her unique way. And then this is Jane's characterization of it. Wake up! Who are you talking to? What are you doing? Why are you sleeping now? It's like she's beating him up. Wake up, you stupid ox. And discrimination fell away, and he realized that this ordinary woman was someone of strong practice. So, by ignoring the unconditioned present, he had been wandering in a dreamlike state looking for what was already there. Which seems to me that this is what we've been saying. And she says at the end, I said this before, that it reminds her of one of Chipa Sensei's primary teachings. Take full responsibility for your life in the world as it is. And Jane says, in gratitude, I offer my words. Cutting off the north, east, and west, and rolling up the south behind me, I take a step, and then another, and another. Any questions or comments?
Striking image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it, rolling up the south behind me. The editors, Susan Moon and Florence Kaplow, wrote a little verse at the end of each one called the capping verse. And this one says, is it possible to train the wayward mind to stay on the Dharma path? What is the name of your inner ox? When you meet a stranger, how do you know whether she's your teacher?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Did we study this book once?
Yeah, when it came out, a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it, we didn't go through it from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. Some of them were at least grabbed me more than others. I don't know. But I just haven't, you know, so he sort of arises and we work with it. And there are a number of people of color teachers. Women teachers of color in this book, and one of them was Zenju Earthwind Manuel, who came and talked here about the way of tenderness, and the other one was a hyphenated name which I forgot. I know Earthwind, so the other one was like what in Houston?
I don't know.
Yeah, you're going to go visit her and report back to us.
Oh, the one in Houston I'm supposed to visit one day.
Well, you said you would.
I would like to. I have to remember to do so when the time comes.
And then I'm going
to
visit Galen in the Houston Zen Center.
Okay.
Well, yeah. You said.
I'm ready. One day.
All right. Okay.
Sorry. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are...